Hello and welcome to a special episode of Chronically Chilled for 3CR's Disability Day programming. I'm Bridget MacArthur, and today we're going to be talking about disability justice for refugees in detention, with a spotlight on the Medevac refugees, roughly 40 of whom are currently imprisoned just down the road in the Park Hotel on stolen Wurundjeri land. I'd also like to observe that the Wurundjeri people themselves have already welcomed the Medevac refugees to country, meaning that in the eyes of this land's sovereigns, they are allowed to be free, so long as they obey local laws. And now, a question. Who listening experienced some form of mandated quarantine in the last 18 months? If you can, I want you to close your eyes and recall that experience. Or for those who didn't, recall some memories of lockdown, isolation, how you felt. When I returned from the UK last year, I had to do a 2-week quarantine. I hated it. Now, imagine that time, those feelings, those experiences, stretching over 8 years with no certainty as to when it will end and almost no access to medical attention. That's a scenario that Iranian refugee Mohammad Mousavi is currently living out, alongside roughly 40 others imprisoned in the Park Hotel, after having come to Australia under the Medevac Bill, which briefly allowed for asylum seekers with urgent medical needs to come to shore for treatment, before being repealed less than a year into enforcement in late 2019. Now, not only has not one of these individuals received the medical treatment they were promised, approximately 23 of them have contracted COVID-19 in the last month. Unsurprising given the venue was deemed unfit for the prevention of COVID outbreaks when it was trialled for use as part of the hotel quarantine initiative. So far from medical support, most refugees have either seen existing disabilities worsen or new ones develop, particularly psychosocial, in detention. We'll be hearing from Mohammed in a moment. This interview does contain reference to self-harm and suicide, which may be triggering to some. While the trauma Mohammed has experienced and is still experiencing is important for us to be made aware of, we don't want to inadvertently traumatize others who may have similar or adjacent personal experiences. Now to the interview. I'd like to welcome Mohammed Mousavi to the show. Hi, Mohammed.
Hello, how are you?
To kick off with, I think a lot of people know you guys just as the Medevac refugees, but it would be great if you could give us some background on you as an individual, where you grew up, and maybe what you've done for work.
I can only say that I grew up in Iran, which is ruled by a dictatorial government that kills people easily, and everyone knows that. And my brother was arrested and seeking under physical torture and hasn't been able to return to a normal life so far.
And so you left Iran 8 years ago, yes. Is it? And you've been in detention that whole time?
Yes, about 2012, I fled my country. And I came to Indonesia, and I really made a mistake to come to Australia, but really I didn't know anything about the rule. I mean, 19th of July, 2013. When I arrived on Christmas Island, I found out, and unfortunately it was too late, and I didn't have a way back. And the government, Australian government, sent me to the Christmas Island. And I've been in Christmas Island, in Manus Island for 6 years. And then I was brought to Australia under the Medevac rule. And I made a mistake, really. I made a mistake again to come to Australia again 2019 under the Medevac rule. We didn't know anything about this situation again.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, you say you made a mistake, but of course it's hard to make decisions without that information to hand.
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable, could you tell us what the health reason was that you were brought here for under Medevac?
I was brought to Australia due to mental, physical, and psychological problem resulting from my detention in PNG. Those problems are only increasing during my long detention here in Australia, and I'm suffering now from many illnesses, many, many illnesses. I have problem with my knee, my heart, with stress, my ear, and I've got another problem. I cannot mention it here. And my teeth are completely damaged and need to be repaired. I'm losing control on myself, and unfortunately, IHMS do not do anything to help me, to back of care, to the lack of care I'm experiencing. I cannot cope with this, really.
Have you received any medical treatment since arriving here?
No, I didn't receive any medical treatment here. I didn't see a specialist here. I never seen a specialist here. I don't know why they didn't send me to the specialist. When I asked them about the about this this situation, about my problem, they just told me, the IHMS told me, we send your file to the specialist.
Yeah, and it's a far cry from, I guess, what was promised and even what is kind of currently being told to the public about the treatment you guys have received.
Yes.
And when did you first hear about COVID-19 as a potential threat? Obviously, there's been the outbreak recently.
You know, we were destroyed everything mentally and physically. There are a lot of people here who don't leave their rooms for days or weeks.
Yeah. Were you given any support around COVID-19, particularly after the outbreak? How was that dealt with?
No, we never get any support from IHMS. And just when I ask about our pain or some problem, like headache or something, it's maybe took a time, 1 hour or 2 hours, to bring us to Panadol. That's it.
Yeah. How do you think the disabilities you've gained in detention will affect you in the outside world, if and when you hopefully get there?
I'm getting worse day by day. I'm losing my my mind. I don't know. This is how Australia treats me, which I need medical care. My stress is killing me. I cannot eat or sleep very well. I'm scared to get heart attack in detention here. I just want to be free. Even I wrote a request, a lot of requests to send me back to Papua New Guinea about 17 months ago, 18 months ago. I wrote a request to send me back to Papua New Guinea. I don't want to stay here. I don't want to stay in the detention. Please send me back. And when I talked to my case manager, my case worker, and told me, you have only one option to go back to the PNG processing center. And I said, yes, I already write a request, a lot of requests, maybe about 100 requests. Please send me back to Papua New Guinea. I don't want to stay here. But I haven't got any answer, any clear answer from them. You know, here in this situation here, for IHMS, if the nurses ask you, how are you? You have to say, I'm fine. If you don't, they're going to put you two officers to watch you out until you say, okay, I'm okay, I'm fine. But really, I'm not okay, I'm not fine. They're following you, following me, or the people who said I'm not fine, or I want to kill myself, or I want to suicide myself. They put the two officers to watch him out, and they follow him in the toilet, in the bathroom, in the room, and every half an hour they come to your room and knock the door with make a noise, and just they come in with the racist behavior. They just tell you, are you okay? Are you okay? It's maybe 24 hours, more than 24 hours it took a time for this. And they never leave you until you said, yes, I'm okay. Just let me go. If you said that, they leave you go. And if you don't, they push more pressure, more mental pressure on you.
So the worse you are feeling mentally, the worse they treat you.
Yeah, I can call that. This is absolutely a torture, but I can call this torture. It's a soft torture, you know. It's exactly soft torture. As I experienced both torture, physically torture and soft torture, it's very worse than physically torture, because this, in physical torture, somebody walked into your room and started beating you, and after maybe 2-3 minutes, he leave you alone again. But here, no. They never beat you. They never touch you. But they play with your mind. They play a game with your mental. They push the mental pressure. Here, all the guys here in hotel and in the detention center, they just thinking about the death. I know many people here in Australia in detention center, and I can call this torture. It's a absolutely soft torture. You cannot, you don't have any defensive power on yourself, nothing.
So how have you been treated for speaking out?
You know, I'm afraid from the ABF and CERCO officers and the IHMS and the immigration. They are really massive scary. I'm scared from them. When I saw them, I'm starting shaking my body and my hand. I just want to run away from them. I just want to hide myself in the room. I don't want to see that clothes, see that uniform in the hotel and in the detention, because really they are scary, you know. But I have many friends in Australia, many kind friends in Australia, and they give us a hope, and they support us. They come in here for protest here in front of a hotel. I have communicated with many Australian out of here. But the government and this system, really, they are really, really scary. I'm really afraid from them. I just looking for a way to run away from this country, from the ABF and this government, actually. It's very awful. It's very scary here. I'm all of the time, I'm stressed. And you know, many people here wants to go to the third country, as the minister said that. Yes, I respect to them rule. Is that okay? It is okay. We all respect them. This is a rule. This is Australian rule. We all never ever settle to Australia, and we know that. So, do not. Why you are doing this to us? Send us to the third country. Please accept the New Zealand offer. At least send us back to the PNG offshore again. At least I was we were free in the community in PNG. I don't understand why the government prefer to keep us in the detention. How much longer punish for just coming to Australia by boat? Exactly how much? That's 9 years now. That's my life. The government destroyed all my life.
Yeah, and on top of that, I guess all the mental trauma and physical disability, I guess, that you will take away with you potentially for life.
Yeah, we're just waiting. We just 24/7 hours waiting for a good news, but it never come. You know, it never come.
You're listening to a special episode of Chronically Chilled for 3CR's Disability Day. And that was Mohammed Mousavi speaking to us from detention in Park Hotel, Swanston Street. I mean, that just is really hard, even listening back to be honest. I had my list of questions prepared, as I would for a regular briefing in my day-to-day work. But to be speaking with Mohammed, imagining his conditions just down the road from me. I felt incredibly privileged and honestly somewhat embarrassed, really, at my own perceived hardship under lockdown, despite having had access to the meds and health services I need to manage my own chronic condition. But the thing is, that shouldn't be a privilege. The UN Declaration of Human Rights sets out healthcare as an individual human right and provides for additional accommodations in case of physical debilitation or disability. Australia likes to say it has a strong and proud record of human rights. As someone who's been the beneficiary of many of the freedoms this country affords, perhaps I would once have agreed, but human rights are apparently not doled out by location. They're not enshrined within our country's borders. Rather, they're conditional on skin colour, class, the way you arrived here. A recent report by Melbourne Uni found that the rate of self-harm among people seeking asylum was more than 200 times the Australian community hospital treated rate. In 2016, UNHCR found that 88% of refugees and people seeking asylum on Manus Island were suffering from depression, anxiety, and/or post-traumatic stress disorder. It's hard to fathom what Mohammed and his fellow detainees are going through. Maybe that's why the public is still largely unaware of their plight. To try and help make sense of it all and discuss the Refugee Council of Australia's recent submission to the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability, I'd like to welcome Senior Policy Officer Sahar Akhavat to the show.
Hi, Sahar. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So to jump right into it, can you give us some background into the research and production of what's a pretty hefty submission that you've made to the Royal Commission?
We as Refugee Council decided to make a submission to Disability Royal Commission to really highlight the issues that people with disability in immigration detention face. We felt that this issue has not been adequately explored. There are a lot of issues that people face in terms of accessibility, in terms of healthcare. So it was really a good opportunity for us to highlight various gaps and also bringing the voices of people with lived experiences of disability and detention.
Yeah, great. And what are some of the key recommendations?
There are a number of areas that we look at, but I think the main issue when it comes to immigration detention in Australia is there is no review of the need to detain. Detention is mandatory irrespective of people's need and vulnerability. Anyone can be detained, anyone who is unlawful non-citizen, if they are a child, if they are significantly ill, if they are survivors of torture and trauma, and if they have disability, that those issues are not even considered in the need to detain. So one of our biggest recommendations is that the Australian government should limit the detention of people with disability to the measure of absolute last resort. We think even though immigration detention is mandatory, the government can use community alternatives to lock the detention, and that should be prioritized for people with disability. We are also asking the Royal Commission to do an interim report on this issue, mainly because some of the issues we have raised are quite urgent and quite significant, and we know that Royal Commission is going to provide its report in 2023. So that was another recommendation that we really wanted to highlight this as soon as possible.
So you were talking about lived experiences, collecting the lived experiences of those in detention. What are you seeing going on at the moment?
One challenge we faced for this submission was we couldn't speak to as many people that we wanted to with the experiences of detention and disability, mainly because when people are in detention, they are usually quite reluctant to speak about their experiences. They fear That nothing will improve for them and they will only face a repercussion for speaking out. And those who left, at times they understandably just want to get on with their lives. So that was the area we struggled. But what we did was we had some really good case studies. We did manage to speak to a couple of people, and we complemented that with really good feedback we received from people's lawyers, from their counselors, from medical providers, and supporters, just individual supporters. So that really complemented that consultation for us and provided a really good picture of what's happening in detention. And I think for me, what thing that stood out was just that indefinite nature of detention, and that at times people with disability, and we have provided a few examples in the submission, have been in detention and in locked onshore detention for 9-10 years. And that's quite a significant period of time. And the other point is that lens that risk-based perspective and that lens into management of detention. There are a number of cases and examples where people's behavior is because of their distress, because of their psychosocial disability, but they are just merely seen as behavioral issues, as people being aggressive or people acting out. So that really, that holistic view is not provided, that people are not, the fundamental issues are not really seen, and people do not receive a proper care, which at times is really not possible when someone remains in immigration detention.
Yeah, you touch on the indefinite length. The government made an amendment to the Migration Act earlier this year, is that right? And a potential effect of that is to kind of push for it to be longer periods of detention potentially. What are those disability related effects?
Yeah, so the effect of indefinite detention is just the declining mental health. And I think a few months ago, there was a freedom of information request that was responded to. And it was asking how many people with disability are in detention as of June 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And the number was 130. So that's 10% of population in onshore detention. But really, I think that's an understatement because the way disability is identified and measured is when people arrive, they are not assessed at various intervals. And we know if someone arrives in detention and then spends 10 years in detention, their mental health decline. And then they will get to a point that it will present as a barrier to them living independently. So that's why I think we have people who entered detention with disability, and then we have people who developed disability because of that indefinite detention.
Yeah. The situation currently is obviously so awful, and when we spoke to Mohammed, and he was telling us how when they are asked if they're fine, they have to say yes, they're fine, because if they hint at being not fine or being suicidal, they get followed around, followed to the toilet, woken up every half hour to check that they're not going to kill themselves. Why isn't the government and the Australian Border Force being held to account for the current conditions, and why don't we really know about it?
That's a good question. And I don't, unfortunately, I don't think I have an answer for it, because that's my question too. I mean, we try really hard to at least document and try to put these issues on record. There are some senators in the parliament who ask really good questions in the Senate estimates. to understand what's happening in detention, ask really good questions through questions on notice, and they really help us in understanding the situation a little bit more. We always go through those questions and find really good answers. There are some positive steps, like obviously we have Australian Human Rights Commission, who provides really good reports into the situation of onshore detention. But unfortunately, again, doing an analysis of their reports, a lot of the recommendations they make to the government are either rejected outright or they are not implemented, even though they are accepted in principle. Mm-hmm. Australia in 2017, at the end of 2017, ratified the optional protocol into Convention Against Torture that provides more monitoring into places where people are deprived of liberty. And one of those places are federally controlled immigration detention centers. So they are the positive steps, but then if they are not resourced properly, and more importantly, if they are not, the recommendations are ignored, they are just reports that are sitting there. And all of this, it just adds to that lack of transparency and the secrecy that is around the operation of immigration detention.
And now that you've made the submission, what happens next? And I guess what can the general public or listeners do?
We are hoping to use this submission to really start a conversation, a very targeted conversation with Australian Border Force, with detention service management and providers to ensure that the situation improves for people with disability. Obviously, we appreciate any support that Royal Commission can provide in highlighting this issue whenever it publishes its report or if it decides to do an interim report. I think the general public, it's just in a democracy, it's all about asking questions from our members of parliament. If things are unacceptable, we should question them and we should ask, why is it like that? Why people with disability are being punished? Why are we not pushing for a review of the need to detain? We know people with disability are in detention. We don't think that's okay. We know there are valid, cheaper community alternatives to locked detention with appropriate reporting in place if they are concerned politicians about risks. Why don't we use them more freely? So these are all conversations that people can have with their elected representatives.
That was Saha Okhavat, Senior Policy Officer at the Refugee Council of Australia. If you are wanting to take action, you can also join us on Human Rights Day next Friday, the 10th of December from 6:30 p.m. outside the Park Hotel to show your support for refugee rights. To paraphrase Para de Arme woman, Elena MacDonald, whose words have been the inspiration for today's Disability Day special at 3CR, our world is held in intersectional collective liberation. One out, all out. If today's program has caused any distress, please call Lifeline on 131114 or contact Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Chronically Chilled will be back broadcasting on 3CR in 2022. You can listen to us on the first Wednesday of every month or via the podcast.